But now let us go to the clarification on page 282. Here, of mindfulness, right mindfulness alone is implied. Similarly, by the four supreme efforts, right effort is implied. That means there is only one mindfulness or only one sati. Although there is only one sati, in this section, sati is described as of four kinds, and they are contemplation on the body and so on. Although mindfulness is only one, because there are four kinds of objects, mindfulness is divided into four kinds. So the body, the feelings, the consciousness, and the Dhamma objects. And also, in order to get rid of wrong notions, four kinds of wrong notions, the objects are divided into four. It is said that people tend to take body to be beautiful. People think that body is beautiful, and they try to make their body beautiful as much as they can. But the Buddha said body is not beautiful. In fact, it is filthy or falsome. So in order to know that the body is actually not beautiful, the contemplation on the body is given. So while practicing contemplation on the body, one comes to understanding that the body in reality is not beautiful. And it is said that people tend to take feeling as happiness, especially the pleasant feeling. So when we have pleasant feeling, we think we are happy, we are in happiness. So in order to make people understand that feeling is actually suffering or dukkha, Buddha gave the second contemplation on feelings. So when we concentrate on feeling, when we make notes of feeling, say we come to understand what feeling is, especially painful feeling. So when there is painful feeling and we concentrate on the feeling, we know that it is something that inflicts our body, and something that is difficult to endure, and so we know that it is not happiness, but it is dukkha. And also when we concentrate on the pleasant feelings, we know that pleasant feeling does not last for long. It comes and it goes, and so it is impermanent. And Buddha said that whatever is impermanent is dukkha. Whatever is impermanent is suffering. So here, suffering means not painful, but being oppressed by rise and fall. So the characteristic of dukkha is being oppressed by rise and fall. That means having rise and fall, having a beginning and an end. So when we concentrate on the feeling, even on the pleasant feeling, we come to know that this pleasant feeling has a beginning and an end, and so it is oppressed by arising and disappearing, and so it is dukkha or suffering. So in order to understand feeling as suffering, the second contemplation is given. And also people tend to take consciousness as permanent. we think that we have the same consciousness as we had as a child, or as we had a few years ago, and so on. Although we think that at every moment there is a different kind of consciousness, still we think that we have the same consciousness. So we tend to take consciousness as permanent. So in order to show that consciousness is not permanent, Buddha gave us the third contemplation, the contemplation on consciousness. So when we concentrate on the consciousness, we come to see that consciousness comes and goes. Now, when you are practicing meditation, keeping your mind on the in and out or rising and falling of the abdomen, and then your mind wanders and you are aware of that wandering and you make mental notes as wandering, wandering. And after two or three notes, wandering disappears and you go back to the breath or the movements of the abdomen. So you see for yourself that consciousness arises and disappears. And at every moment there is a different or a new consciousness arising and then disappearing. So when you see consciousness as coming and going at every moment, arising and disappearing at every moment, you come to realize that consciousness is impermanent. So in order for us to understand that consciousness is impermanent, Buddha gave us the contemplation on consciousness. And then there are Dhamma objects, the other mental states, and also some material states. We tend to take these as self, as abiding entity, as soul. So in order to show that they are not self, they are not abiding, they are without an inner core, Buddha gave us the contemplation on the Dhamma objects. So when we concentrate on the Dhamma objects, we come to see that they also come and go, they arise and they disappear, and they don't even last for two consecutive moments. So we come to realize that these Dhammas have no inner core, they do not last forever, and they are just the phenomena rolling on and on. And so we come to realize the anatta nature of phenomena when we pay attention to the Dhamma objects. Since there are four kinds of objects and four ways of wrong understanding of these objects, Buddha gave us the four kinds of satipatthana, or four kinds of setting up mindfulness. Therefore, we have not one satipatthana, but four satipatthanas in this section. And there are four supreme efforts. Similarly, by the four supreme efforts, right effort is implied. The right effort is actually one. It is viriya, or effort, among the 52 chetasikas. But there are two kinds of states, wholesome states and unwholesome states. And then there are two kinds of unwholesome states and two kinds of wholesome states. So with regard to these states, we have to do something. We have to make effort to abandon what wholesome states that have arisen in us. And we make effort to prevent new unwholesome states from arising. And we have to make effort to make wholesome states that have not arisen in us arise in us. And we have to make effort to make wholesome states that have arisen in us grow. So there are four ways of making effort depending on the four kinds of states and to each of wholesome and unwholesome states. So although there is just one effort, that means one chetasika, one mental factor that is called effort, there are four supreme efforts. And then by way of states, there are only 14 states treated in this section. And these 14 we studied yesterday. On the chart on Bodhipakkhiya Sangaha, you find these 14 states. And these 14 states are arranged in the chart following the order of times they are mentioned, like 9, 8, 5, 4, and so on. But in the manual, another sequence is given, and that is here. The first is desire or will to do, chando, and then consciousness, then equanimity, faith, tranquility, zest, right view, intention, effort, the three abstinences, right mindfulness, and concentration. So these are 14 that are treated in this section. So when we add up all these, we get 37 states that are on the side of enlightenment. We also studied using the chart, say, how many names a certain mental state has in this chapter. So Virya has 9 names, Sati 8 names, and so on. The last verse in this section is Sabbe Lokotre Honti, and so on. And the translation is, all these occur in the supramundane. That means they arise with supramundane consciousness. Now, how many types of supramundane consciousness are there? Lokutra consciousness. There are 8. All these 37 factors occur in the supramundane. So they all arise with supramundane consciousness. Sotapatti Magga consciousness, Sotapatti Phala consciousness, and so on. Except at times, intention, vitaka, and zest piti. Although we say generally that all these 37 factors of enlightenment arise with supramundane consciousness, but there is an exception. Now, intention. Intention here is vitaka or sammasankappa. Now, the supramundane consciousness, 8 types of supramundane consciousness are multiplied into 40 by way of jhanas. So when we take supramundane consciousness as 40, there are first jhana supramundane consciousness, second jhana supramundane consciousness, and so on. With the second jhana supramundane consciousness, there can be no vitakka. Now you all know that vitaka arises with first jhana consciousness. With second jhana and that fourth, fifth jhana consciousness, vitaka does not arise. So although generally we say all these 37 factors arise with supramundane consciousness, we must understand this exception. So for vitaka, it does not arise with the second jhana supramundane consciousness, and so on. And then the other is piti or zest. P Piti is not found in supramundane chetas occurring at the level of fourth and fifth jhanas. Now there are five jhanas, and with first jhana there is piti. With second jhana there is piti. With third jhana there is piti. But with fourth jhana there is no piti, and with fifth jhana also there is no piti. So piti arises only with first jhana, second jhana, and third jhana consciousness of the supramundane level. So this exception we must make note of. In the mundane, too, they occur in the course of the sixfold purification according to circumstances. Now, in the ninth chapter, we will find the stages of purification. Now, there are seven stages of purification, but here six are mentioned. So during the six stages of purification, these 37 factors arise as the case may be. So that means when practicing meditation with the intention of getting enlightenment, these 37 factors are arising together with the types of consciousness. There are seven stages of purification, and the first is purification of sila, the second is purification of mind or purification of concentration, the third is purification of view, and so on. So during those stages, when a yogi is practicing vipassana meditation, these 37 factors of enlightenment arise with the vipassana consciousness. So during those also, these 37 requisites of enlightenment or the members of enlightenment are found in various combinations according to circumstances. So when the practice of vipassana meditation is with consciousness accompanied by somanasa, there may be piti, but when it is not accompanied by somanasa, there is no piti, and so on. So they arise with mundane consciousness also during the six stages of purity in the practice of meditation. Now we come to the last subsection, a section of the whole, of all. So in this section, those mentioned comprise all ultimate realities mentioned at the beginning of this chapter. Now, for example, the five aggregates. The five aggregates include all the 72 ultimate realities mentioned at the beginning of this chapter, and so on. And there are five categories in this section, and the first is the five aggregates, and the second is the basis, and the third the elements, and the fourth is the compendium of truth. The first of the compendium of the whole are the five aggregates. Now you are all familiar with the five aggregates. So they are rupa aggregate, vedana aggregate, sanya aggregate, sankhara aggregate, and vijnana aggregate. Now rupa aggregate means matter or material properties. Feeling aggregate means feeling, perception means perception, and mental formations means the chetasikas or mental factors other than the feeling and perception. Now, there are altogether 50 of them. And then the last one is aggregate of consciousness. Now here, we must understand the meaning of the word aggregate. Among these aggregates, now number 2 and number 3, feeling aggregate and perception aggregate. Now feeling is only one. It is Vedana, Chetasika, so it is only one. But this one feeling is called an aggregate of feeling, or a group of feeling, a mass of feeling. Now why is this one mental state called an aggregate? Although it is one, it is called an aggregate. And that is because it can be of the past, of the future, of present. Or it can be internal or external. Or it can be gross or subtle. Or it can be inferior or superior. Or it can be far or near. So, taking all these together and putting all these into a group, even Vedana, which is only one, Chetasika is called an aggregate. So, aggregate does not mean the group of material properties, group of feeling, group of perception, and so on. But even one material property is also called an aggregate. One feeling is called an aggregate. One perception is called an aggregate. Because they can be divided into past, present, future, internal, external, gross, subtle, inferior, superior, and far and near. So when something can be divided into past, present, and future, and so on, it can be formed into an aggregate, or we can call it an aggregate. So the first aggregate is the aggregate of materiality, that means just material properties, and there are altogether 28 material properties, and they are taught in the 6th chapter. And the second is a feeling aggregate. There are 3 kinds of feeling or 5 kinds of feelings. And the third one is the perception aggregate. The perception is making marks or making notes of the object. So whenever we experience an object, there arises in our mind a mental state called perception. So that mental state makes the mark of that object, so that when we experience it later, we remember it. So for remembrance, when experienced later, this mental state makes a mark of the object. And that mental state is called perception here. In Pali, it is called sanya. So we should always use the word sanya with the word perception, because perception may mean other things as well. So perception here is a mental state that makes the mark of an object. It is compared to carpenters making marks on the timber. So they make marks on the timber, and later on they know that this butt is to go to this place, and that butt is to go to another place, or this butt is to be cut off, and this butt is to be taken, and so on. So by those marks, they know what to do with the timber. So making marks like that is the function of sanya, or perception, here translated as perception. And the fourth is mental formations aggregate. Now the Pali word for the mental formations is sankhara. Now we will meet sankhara again when we study the dependent origination. The word sankhara is a difficult word because it means almost opposite of each other. Let's say sankhara has two meanings, at least two meanings, and these two meanings are opposed to each other. Sankhara means something that makes, and sankhara means something that is made. So one is the active sense and the other is the passive sense. That is why it is not easy to understand or to translate the word sankhara whenever we find this word in our readings. We have to ascertain in what sense it is used, in the active sense or in the passive sense. So here, the word is sankhara khanda. Sankhara is used here. And here it is used in the sense of active sense. So that means something that makes, that conditions. And something that makes or that conditions is actually the volition or chetana. So volition or chetana is called kama and it gives results in the future. And so the name sankhara is actually the name of chetana. And chetana is what is called kama. But those other mental states that go along with chetana are also called sankhara. And they do some kind of making or forming. So in English it is translated as formations or mental formations. So formations here means those that are formed, those that form or those that make. So I think this word is a little tricky. Some people translate it as volitional activity. There is no satisfactory word in English. Maybe I don't know the satisfactory word, although there is a satisfactory word. So let us just follow the translation here, mental formations. So here mental formations means those that form, those that make. And if you go back to the second chapter, you will find that there are 52 chetasikas. And among these 52 chetasikas, there is feeling and there is perception. So they form the separate aggregate. And then the other 50 as a whole are grouped as the fourth aggregate, that is sankhara aggregate or mental formation aggregate. And five is the consciousness as aggregate. So you know there are 89 or 121 types of consciousness. So all consciousness are called consciousness aggregate. Even one consciousness is called an aggregate because that one consciousness can be of past, future, present, internal or external and so on. Now, why are feeling and perception taken as separate aggregate? They are only one and they are taken as separate aggregate. Now, it is explained in the commentaries that they are important and they are beneficial to the existence in the samsara. When we feel good about something, we like that object or we are attached to it. And in order for us to be attached to it, the perception makes us like it. Now perception can be right or wrong. Whether right or wrong, when we are following the perception, then we experience the object more fully. So perception is like seasoning in the food. And feeling is like the taste of the food. So in order for a being to go along the samsara, to go from one life to another, to be in the samsara, these two are beneficial. These two are important. That is why each one of them are taken as a separate aggregate. The next category is the aggregate of clinging. Now, there are two aggregates, right? Just aggregate and aggregate of clinging. Aggregate of clinging means aggregate that are the object of clinging, or that can be the object of clinging. So we must understand this clearly. So aggregate of clinging means not clinging taken as aggregate, but aggregates that are objects of clinging or that are subject to clinging. That means aggregates we can cling to. And there are five of them, the same as the five aggregates in general. But here they are, or they must be, the object of clinging. So if we can cling to something, then that something is called an aggregate of clinging. Now we see something and we can be attached to it. We can cling to that object by craving or by wrong view. And so that object is the aggregate of clinging for us. So can you tell me anything that cannot be the object of clinging in the world? There is nothing that cannot be the object of clinging in the world. So actually, aggregate of clinging means everything in the world. I may like one thing and you may like another thing, but anything is or can be the object of clinging. We cling to the objects by craving or by a wrong view. So the five aggregates of clinging are almost the same as the five aggregates in general. But there is one difference. Now, we can cling to different types of consciousness. We can cling to this consciousness. We can cling to that consciousness. But we cannot cling to the consciousness that belongs to the supramundane level. We cannot cling to the magga consciousness. We cannot cling to the pala consciousness and so on. So, aggregates of clinging does not include supramundane states. Only mundane states are said to be aggregates of clinging. So when we say just five aggregates, we mean all aggregates, both mundane and supramundane. But when we say five aggregates of clinging, we mean only the mundane aggregates and not supramundane aggregates. That is the difference. And why are these two taught, one aggregate and the other aggregates of clinging? So for general understanding, five aggregates, the teaching of five aggregates is given. But for the purpose of practicing vipassana, the five aggregates of clinging are taught. So we must understand that when we practice vipassana meditation, we take five aggregates of clinging as object and not just aggregate in general. Because the vipassana is actually to avoid clinging to objects. Those objects that we can cling to can be taken as object of vipassana meditation. And we practice vipassana meditation or satipatthana meditation on it, and we are able to prevent clinging from arising. So we must understand that when we practice vipassana meditation, we take five aggregates of clinging as object. That means not five aggregates of clinging at one time or at one and the same moment, but we take any one of these five aggregates of clinging as object. For the purpose of practicing vipassana, the five aggregates of clinging are taught. And you understand that clinging means craving or attachment and wrong view. So we can cling to an object with craving, or we can cling to an object with wrong view. We can be attached to a thing, and we can take that thing as permanent, we can take that thing as a soul, as an abiding entity, and so on. And so such objects that we can cling to by way of attachment or wrong view is called aggregate of clinging. So aggregate of clinging and aggregates are almost the same. The only difference is aggregates in general include both mundane and supramundane, and aggregates of clinging includes only mundane aggregates. The next section is the 12 sense bases. And they are, as in the book, eye base, ear base, the nose base, tongue base, the body base. And then the mind base, the visible form base, the sound base, the smell base, the taste base, the tangible base. And the last, the mental object base. So there are 12 bases. These 12 bases include all the ultimate realities mentioned at the beginning of this chapter. So they are included, they are mentioned here in this last section. So the eye base, ear base, and so on. Please look at the handout sheet, Sabbasangaha. So on that page, the third group is a group of ayatana. Now ayatana is translated as base. Ayatana means location or habitat or base. And so here it is translated as base. And there are 12 ayatanas or bases. And the one is in Pali, chakkhayatana. That means chakkhu ayatana. And that is according to the ultimate reality, chakkhupasara, sensitivity, eye sensitivity. And the second is ear-based, sotayatana, and it is in reality the ear sensitivity. And the third is ghanayatana, or nose-based, and in reality it is the nose sensitivity. And the fourth, jihwayatana, or tongue-based, and in reality it is tongue sensitivity. And the fifth is kayayatana, the body base, and in reality it is the body sensitivity. And then the sixth is called manayatana, the mind base. And mind base consists of all chittas, 89 or 121 types of consciousness. So among these six bases, the five are material, and the last, number six, is mind, or actually it is consciousness. And then number seven is called rupayatana. Here rupa means visible object. We must be careful when we see the word rupa, because it can mean matter in general, and also it can mean a visible object. So here it means a visible object. an object that can be seen. So the visible form base is rupa, or the visible datum or visible object. And then the sound base in Pali, saddhayatana, it is sound. The nine is gandhayatana, the smell base, and it is smell. And number 10 is rasayatana, or taste base, and it is taste. And number 11, puttabhayatana, tangible base. Now, a tangible base is composed of three essential elements. They are patavi, earth element, tejo, fire element, and vayo, air element. Now, there are four essential elements, material elements taught in Abhidhamma. And they are element of earth, element of water, element of fire, and element of air. And Abhidhamma teaches that element of water cannot be touched. And element of water means not necessarily the water, but the cohesiveness in the water, or moisture or something like that in water. That is what we call water element. And so that water element, according to Abhidhamma, cannot be touched. So when we take the puttabhayatana to be tangible base or tangible object, we take just three of them. So we leave out the water element. So the element of earth, element of fire, and element of air, combination of these three are what we call tangible object. So there is no separate tangible object other than the combination of these three essential elements. And then number 12, dhammayatana. Now it is translated as mental object base. I would say dhamma object base, dhammayatana, or just dhamma base. Dhamma base means chetasikas. Sukumarubas means subtle matter. There are 16 particles of subtle matter taught in the 6th chapter. And then Nibbana, altogether 69. So these 69 are here called Dhammayatana, Dhamma base. So 1, 2, 6 are called internal. And 7 to 12 are called external. Actually, 1 to 6 are senses. But 7 to 12 are not senses. They are the objects of the senses. So we would rather call them just bases, rather than sense base, or maybe bases for senses as well as senses as bases. Now here, the Dhammayatana is important. In the third chapter, objects are divided into six kinds: visible object, audible object, and so on. And the last one is Dhamma object. Now, Dhamma object and Dhammayatana are not identical. That is why it is difficult to understand correctly whenever we find these words. So here we have the word Dhammayatana, Dhamma base. And there in the third chapter, page 135, we have Dhammaramana, Dhamma object. So Dhamma object and Dhammayatana here, Dhamma base, are not identical. So please turn to page 135. There it is explained that Dhamma object is sixfold: sensitive matter, subtle matter, consciousness, mental factors, Nibbana, and concepts. These six kinds of objects are called Dhamma objects in the third chapter. But not all of them are called Dhamma Yatana or Dhamma base here. Here only the mental factors, subtle matter, and Nibbana are called Dhamma base. So please be careful about these two words, Dhamma Ramana and Dhamma Yatana, Dhamma object and Dhamma base. Again, Dhamma object consists of sensitive matter, subtle matter, consciousness, mental factors, Nibbana, and concepts. But Dhamma Yatana consists of only mental factors, subtle matter, and Nibbana. And this is explained in the notes on page 287, about the middle of the first paragraph. Thus, it excludes the first five objective bases, the five types of sensitive matter, and citta, which is identical with the mind base. It also excludes concepts, since the notion of base extends only to ultimate realities, that is, things existing by way of intrinsic nature. They have their own existence and does not extend to things that owe their existence to conceptual construction. The concepts are said to exist only in our imaginations, and they have no real existence. So they are excluded here. The Dhamma base comprises the 52 mental factors, 16 kinds of subtle matter, and Nibbana. So, in these 12, the Chakkhayatana or eye base correspond to visible form, ear base correspond to sound base, and so on. But the mind base and Dhamma object base are different. They do not correspond to each other. The mind base means 89 or 121 types of consciousness, but Dhamma base means the mental factors, subtle matter, and Nibbana. So these are the 12 bases or 12 ayatanas. Now the next category is of dhatus or elements. They are called dhatus in Pali because they bear their own intrinsic natures. They hold their own natures. They have their intrinsic natures as their own, and such things are called dhatu in Abhidhamma. And these dhatus are said to be of 18, and they are first eye element, and the second the ear element, third nose element, fourth tongue element, and fifth the body element. So they are the same as the first five bases. And sixth, visible form element, that means visible object. Seven, sound element. Eight, the smell element. Nine, the taste element. The tenth, the tangible element. They correspond to the five in the bases. And then 11 is the eye consciousness element. 12, ear consciousness element. 13, nose consciousness element. 14, tongue consciousness element. 15, body consciousness element, 16, the mind element, 17, mental object element or Dhamma element, and 18, the mind consciousness element. Now, if you look at these 18, you will see the first 5 are the senses. And then from number 6 to 10 are the corresponding objects of those. And then number 11 to 18 are the different types of consciousness. So the number 11 is eye consciousness, number 12 is ear consciousness, and so on. And then you go to the mind element, mental Dhamma object element, and mind consciousness element. So they will be explained later. Now please turn to page 290. Clarification. Here in 69 states comprising 52 mental factors, 16 kinds of subtle matter and Nibbana are regarded as the Dhamma object base and the Dhamma base and Dhamma element. So among the 12 bases, the last one is Dhammayatana, Dhamma base. Among the 18 elements, the last one is Dhamma Dhatu, Dhamma element. So Dhamma base and Dhamma element are the same. They are identical. And they represent 52 mental factors, 16 kinds of subtle matter, and Nibbana. The mind base itself is divided into the 7 elements of consciousness. Now, the mind base among the bases is divided into 7 among the elements. So that is why we have 18 elements while there are only 12 bases. So 12 bases become 18 elements because one of the bases, the mind base, is divided into 7 here. And these 7 are eye consciousness element, ear consciousness element, nose, tongue, body consciousness element, and mind element, and Dhamma object element, and mind consciousness element. Now, mind element. What is mind element? You remember mind element? Where do you find it? In the 3rd chapter. On page 145, last but one paragraph. But the mind element, namely the 5 door advancing consciousness and the 2 types of receiving consciousness. So mind element means 5 sense door advancing consciousness, that is 1, and 2 types of receiving consciousness. So altogether, 3 types of consciousness. 5 door advancing consciousness and 2 receiving consciousnesses. These 3 are called mind element. So here, number 16, mind element means these 3 types of consciousness. And then number 17, Dhamma Dhatu, is explained by the author himself as comprising of 52 mental factors, 16 kinds of subtle matter, and Nibbana. And the rest, types of consciousness, are all called the mind consciousness element. So these are the terms we have to be familiar with. if we are not familiar with these terms, when we get into the Abhidhamma Pitaka itself, we will be lost. Because these terms are used there instead of the familiar receiving consciousness, investigating consciousness, and so on. You do not find receiving consciousness in the Dhammasangani. You do not find investigating consciousness in the Dhammasangani. But they will be described as mind element, mind consciousness element, and so on. So it is important that we are familiar with these terms. The last category is the category of truth. So as you know, there are four noble truths: the noble truth of suffering, the noble truth of the origin of suffering, the noble truth of the cessation of suffering, and noble truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. So there are four noble truths. I think we'll have a break.